you want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media, you are listening to the right channel. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
This is The Scoop, a weekly regional roundup of stories from remote radio stations in British Columbia. Each week, The Scoop features news created by fellow LJI journalists in the communities of Smithers, Prince George, Nanaimo, Burnaby, and the Comox Valley. LJI is the local journalism initiative, and it's how your best local news is funded on these participating stations. Now, let's see what's happening this week in BC.
Today on The Scoop, a new exhibition at the Bill Reid Gallery of Northwest Coast Art in Vancouver is celebrating the work of the Masta Haida artist and his contributions to community and culture. Jesse Wensloff at CJSF has that story. RCMP inadvertently recovered stolen tools worth a few thousand dollars in Prince George, and Ian Gregg at CIFA Radio will bring us more. Lauren McKenzie at CHLY in Nanaimo reports on a new program at Vancouver Island University that is helping former foster care youth pay for post-secondary education and trades training. And at CICK News, Pam Hassan reports on families still advocating for justice along the Highway of Tears as they begin their march for stolen sisters in Terrace. Stay with us.
A new exhibition at the Bill Reid Gallery of Northwest Coast Art in Vancouver is celebrating the work of a Master Haida artist and his outstanding contributions to his family, his community, and his culture. This is the featured artist, Kiliata Christian White.
Many of these pieces are inspired from stories that keep us tied to the lands and waters of our Haida Gwaii. And you can see the different techniques I've employed in my sculptures. It also shows the passing on of the knowledge and the culture to the next generation.
The retrospective exhibition, Kiliata Christian White, Master Haida Artist, spans the career of the renowned carver and multidisciplinary artist, ranging from stunningly detailed stone argillite sculptures and silver jewelry to cedar bentwood boxes and ceremonial masks.
It's a great feeling to be here in the Bill Reid Gallery and see all these pieces in the exhibition together. And, it kind of shows the generations and the different decades, really, of my carving career, my art career, and also to kind of educate people that come here to see. I think they could view our community, our Haida community from Haida Gwaii, through a lens here and be able to see, just like our different movements that we've started through the years, the revival of our arts and culture, our ceremonies, our connection with the ancestors. Each one of the parts of the exhibit show that, really. And the value that we place upon our work, that we have created over the years.
The unifying theme running through the entire exhibition is one of family and community, as the exhibit tells the story of Kiliata Christian White's unwavering commitment to uplifting members of his family and community through apprenticeships, the revival and renewal of traditional artistic and cultural practices, and the transformation of his own craft from a commercial endeavor to make ends meet into the center of an artistic community that preserves, shares, and pushes Haida art into the future.
My name is Amelia Ray. I am the assistant curator here at the Bill Reid Gallery and the co-curator of this exhibition. This was really exciting and felt very natural. I grew up really closely with Christian's daughter. She's my best friend. And I grew up as a lead dancer in his dance group and spent a lot of time at his longhouse. So it kind of felt really right that we would put this on for him, and also like a lot of pressure because him and his family have just done so much for our community, so it felt really, it was a lot of pressure to be like, how can we honor him in the magnitude that he deserves. That was so important to us because that's how we know him, and all of the collectors and people who know his work know him as an argillite carver and somebody who's selling in galleries, but to Haida Gwaii, he's the person who does so much for our community and for the preservation of our Haida culture. And so it felt really important that we honor that and reflect that in this exhibition, because he's, you think of Christian White and he's so much more than just Christian White. He's his family and his dedication to our people. And he said something at one of his potlatches in 2022 that he's doing this out of the love for his people. And I think that we tried to reflect that the best way that we could.
While Kiliata Christian White has been sharing his culture with the world by creating and selling sculptures and other art since he was a youth, he eventually realized that through his art, he could build and strengthen his community in Haida Gwaii, preserving and revitalizing his people's traditional culture and heritage.
But midway through my career, I realized that we don't have to sell everything. We could keep what we want. We could keep things for our own use and our own culture. And so I found a way to do it. Something that wasn't really even heard of. We were encouraged, back in the day, we were just encouraged to sell everything, to burn everything, to move on. But in a way, it was our culture that kind of saved us and saved my family. You know, we had nothing left. There was no fishing industry left. Logging was just devastating our islands. And so those weren't directions I wanted to go in. And so I was drawn to the arts. And now I encourage visitors to come to our islands. And what I encourage them to do is to take a picture, to go for a walk, to buy a piece of art, to support a living artist. So that's what I do, and I try to educate them.
This community-centric revitalization, helped by Kiliata Christian White's apprentices, has included a resurgence in the creation of one of the Haida's most iconic works.
You know, right now it's raising as many totem poles as we can on Haida Gwaii. There's a revival of that also. In 2017, I carved a totem pole. I had 8 apprentices, 4 female, 4 male. And then we carved a totem pole. It was standing as a tree December 1st or so. And then by June, it was standing as a totem pole. And I believe every one of those students really learned and gained a lot from that experience, as I did. And then I've seen a pole being raised in Haina, which is another ancient village. Another one was down in Kai'au or whatever, down in Windy Bay. So there's a revival of bringing totem poles back out onto the land, into the ancient village sites again. And so, you know, there was a big gap of 125 years of no totem poles being carved, and now it's been revived. And so there could be even a full-time carving in my community where I could have many apprentices, and I don't even have to do it all too. We have other master carvers, journeymen that can carry it about. And so I think we've started that revival, really.
Beyond creating new works and preserving traditional techniques and methods, Kiliata Christian White's teachings build and strengthen community and provide his apprentices with structure, purpose, and sometimes a lifeline.
Like, I've probably kept a few people out of prison. So, or, you know, from going into that line, you know, if, you know, just getting into trouble. And so I've been able to deter them from that lifestyle. But, you know, of course, it's up to them, too. So it's not a total foolproof, but it gives them an alternative. And, you know, there's some, you know, that have difficulties. You know, they might have a mild disability, or they could have other troubles in their lives. They need alternative types of education. Sometimes the school model is not the only model. You know, sometimes, you know, it's a more holistic type of model that they need, and then they can move back, you know, to the school system. Sometimes they got to get that something out of their system, and they got to feel proud about themselves. And you know, it's worked well for me. And you know, some of them will move off to other specialties or other activities, other careers, but that's fine. They'll still have those tools, that knowledge behind them, and then that pride in the culture.
Kiliata Christian White's legacy is further cemented by the works of his apprentices, who have taken his traditional teachings and shaped a bold new future for Haida art.
Haida art is going in many directions. We have some artists working in Haida manga. We have artists that are working in filmmaking, graphic design, working in multi-graphic type of materials, you know, children's books, you know, incorporating the Haida language. And you also have a lot of people involved with the textiles. For the most part, I try to focus on the traditional parts first, and then once they're done with me, they could go any direction they want to go. And of course, you know, there's jewelry, there's weaving, you know, so there's many different you know, directions we can go.
Kiliata Christian White, Master Haida artist, runs until February 2026 at the Bill Reid Gallery of Northwest Coast Art in Vancouver. For CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, I'm Jesse Wensloff.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca. Secondhand tools are a hot item on a lot of social media platforms. We want to take advantage of a deal. It's a good thing to do. But sometimes secondhand tools are not from a legitimate source. And in fact, just recently, the RCMP has recovered some stolen tools. We're with Corporal Jennifer Cooper at the RCMP detachment. Jennifer, can you tell us a little bit about what has been recovered?
We have two steel chainsaws, and we have a Milwaukee power supply and a Husqvarna rail saw. So specifically that last one is pretty unique. There's only going to be a few companies in town that may have a rail saw. So what we're asking anyone to do is take a look in their outbuildings, maybe their cargo trailers or sheds. If you're missing these items or items that match those descriptions and you have the serial numbers, come down to the RCMP detachment on the corner of 4th and Victoria with proof of your serial numbers, and we can hook you back up with your stolen goods.
The rail saw, is that specific to work with railroads, rail lines, work of that nature?
From what we've been able to discover online, trying to figure out what this is, that would appear to be the case. Yeah, this is very specific to anyone who's working with rail lines. It seems to be just made for that particular job function.
How were these items recovered? What tipped off the RCMP? Was this found through a typical search on online resales, or was it recovered through a tangential reason?
It was tangential. So we were investigating an unrelated matter and came across these tools in the possession of someone who probably didn't have a reason to have them. So we have recovered these items, and we're just really hoping to match them up with their proper owners, because a couple of them are actually really high ticket items. So those persons are probably, they're out a couple of thousand dollars each, definitely.
Certainly. For people who might be looking for secondhand tools, things like that, perhaps you're searching Marketplace or, other secondhand platforms, pawn shops, and you suspect that maybe an item isn't of honest source, are there any steps that an individual might take to clear that up or avoid purchasing something that may not be honestly ascertained?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that you could do. If it's a bigger ticket item and you are kind of suspicious, ask them for the serial number. You can always come down to the police station and we can try running the serial number, see if it's been reported to us. You can also go for larger items, such as not necessarily all bikes, but some bikes, cars, and boats. You can go to CPIC online, so that's CPIC online, and you can actually access the public side of that website. It's the Canadian Police Information Centre, and you can run the serial number or the VIN or the boat's VIN. I know it's not called that, but the boat's VIN through that and see if it's ever been reported stolen before with the serial number attached, and that would come up for you there. So you can get a little bit more of a good feeling about purchasing some of those items. But if you have reason to believe that the item is stolen, the best advice that I could give is to probably avoid purchasing that one, because possession is not 9/10 of the law, it turns out, as the old adage goes. And even if you've purchased it off Marketplace, you've made a legitimate purchase, and we find out that that's a stolen item, we will take that back and you are out that money, because that is just, again, another type of fraud that you've unwillingly fallen victim to. So if you think it's a deal that's too good to be true, probably is, avoid it and save yourself any potential future headache.
To individuals who do realize that something has been stolen from their shed, their vehicle, their items are now gone, are there preventative measures that people can take and follow-up steps that people can pursue as far as preventing these types of things from entering the black market of secondhand tool sales?
Preventing theft is very difficult. As we all know, many of us have fallen victim to theft of something at one point or another. Some of the steps that you can take to try and safeguard yourself, or at least help get your items back if we're able to locate them, is knowing the serial number or maybe the model number, that unique identifier of your items, having that written down and kept in a safe place. Because really, that's what it's going to come down to. If we locate an item, we're going to ask you for the serial number or the VIN or bike serial number or whatever it happens to be. And if you can't provide us with that unique identifier, chances are we might not be able to match you up again with your items. So making sure you have all of that written down. If it's something that doesn't come with a unique identifier, then carving something in there that's unique to you. Some people say your driver's license number or maybe your house number, something that's unique. Please not your social insurance number. that you would know that you put in there. Yeah, I carved my driver's license number into that piece of equipment, so we know that it's yours.
Good tip.
Hello and welcome to CICK News. Indigenous women make up just 4% of Canada's population, but face a staggering reality. They are 12 times more likely to be murdered or go missing than any other women and 16 times more likely than white women. This crisis sparked grassroots Indigenous-led activism, leading to a national inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, two-spirit and gender-diverse people. After gathering testimony from over 2,000 people, the inquiry's 2019 report identified colonialism, discrimination, and genocide as the root cause of this violence. It issued 231 calls for justice, urging action from governments, institutions, industries, and citizens alike. But to date, only two of those action items of the calls to justice have been completed, and smaller organizations, individuals, families, and Indigenous leaders continue to seek justice for their stolen sisters. In Terrace, the Tears to Hope Society is leading a march to remember their loved one that have gone missing on Highway 16 or the Highway of Tears. Here's executive director and documentary filmmaker Lorna Brown speaking to CICK News about tomorrow's march for MMIWG.
When a woman was murdered in the downtown east side of Vancouver, the community was outraged that this was happening to women, not just in Vancouver, but just across the country. But it was the catalyst that moved women to action. The march started 33 years ago, so been a very long time. There are vigils and marches honoring the lives, of course, of our missing and murdered loved ones along the Highway of Tears.
Can you tell me where the march will take place?
We will meet at the Terrace RCMP station and then walk through town, and then we will have a meeting space at the Terrace Arena, and then there we will have speakers and drummers, and family members will share their stories of their loved ones that have gone missing.
And what kind of response do you get from the people of Terrace and surrounding areas for a gathering for awareness for missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls?
We end up with, sometimes we have about 100 people that come out. We always emphasize that the march is open to all people, mm-hmm. all nationalities. We're very inclusive. We welcome anybody that even wants to learn a little bit more about missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, especially in our backyard. This year we have Angela McDougall, who is the executive director of the Battered Women's Support Services out of Vancouver. And they get a lot of calls from this area. So she is a very passionate person mm-hmm. about gender-based violence and has been doing the work for many years.
CICK News spoke with Angela McDougall about what she'll bring to a Northern MMIWG gathering tomorrow in Terrace.
My name is Angela Marie McDougall, and I'm the executive director at Battered Women's Support Services. I'm really grateful for the opportunity to join the Memorial March in Terrace and to connect the work that we've been doing alongside rural and northern communities for several decades. And in particular, the work around missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls and Two-Spirit people. And that rural women generally and rural Indigenous women specifically really are experiencing a crisis of violence, but also invisibility and really importantly, systemic neglect, which was highlighted in the National Inquiry on Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls and Two-Spirit. Indigenous women and rural families who are often the strongest advocates are often left without answers, without resources, and really without justice. I stand with mothers and aunties and sisters and cousins in rural Indigenous communities who are bearing the weight of what is the crisis of colonization, one of the many factors of colonization, which is, of course, the MMIWG crisis. And mothers, aunties, sisters, and cousins are not only grieving their stolen loved ones, but also fighting a legal system, a system of Canada that really is ignoring off to off what they're needing. And I can echo and support and amplify what we've heard and have been hearing over the decades of the work that we've been doing, but also to continue advocating, because that's what we do in the sense of wanting to address and redress the lack of resources, the delayed responses of police and other systems, because their voices need to continue to be heard and to be grounded and rooted in any real change that must follow. I come from the kind of violence that I could easily have gone missing myself or have been murdered myself. And when I have been a part of the February 14th Women's Memorial March held in downtown Eastside Vancouver since 1994. Wow. And it has been that work that continues, leaning on that 34, 35 year experience of being led by Indigenous women is what I am really honored to be part of in Terrace, because I love the Northwest, North Coast. I appreciate all of the leaders, Indigenous leaders that are doing incredible work. And it's an honor to be in the region and to share together what is our shared interest in about ending violence against women and addressing missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls.
Here's Lorna Brown again.
And there's actually probably about 12 people that are actually flying up here to support. Because often in the North, we do get left out and we don't receive a lot of support. And I am, of course, a family member. My niece, Tamara Chipman, went missing on the Highway of Tears. And in fact, the very first Highway of Tears walk, because my cousin, Florence Nizel, from Whitsett, BC. Mm-hmm. She didn't know what to do when my niece went missing in 2005. She just felt like she needed to do something and she didn't know what. And at the time, there were a few girls, 15, 16 years old, that were going missing from Whitsett. And so she really wanted to raise awareness and draw attention to this.
Now, you went to Ottawa last week to represent Tears of Hope and also for a collaborative nationwide event about this and about the calls to action. Can you tell me about what you took away from Ottawa?
So we had a meeting with Minister Gary Ananda-Sangari, along with some other family members that are affected by MMIWG. It was great to be able to come together with other leaders and provincial, federal government to discuss what calls to action have been actually that are in progress, those that are completed. And to my knowledge, I believe there's only two that are completed and the rest are, most of them haven't been started. Mm-hmm. And then some of them are in progress. It feels uphill battle most days, but we continue, because if we don't continue, I'm not sure if any of our cases will ever get solved. So we just continue on, and then we can take from the things that will work for us here in BC, because even though our issues are the same or our end results sadly are the same, sometimes we deal with a little bit different issues, and sometimes our culture is maybe a bit different, and So it's just really important that we can come together with those other organizations from other provinces so that we can all work on a solution to end gender-based violence.
Thanks to Lorna Brown from the Terrace Tears to Hope Society and Angela McDougall from Vancouver's Battered Women Support Services for their interviews.
This is a CHY News Update. A Vancouver Island University student is sharing the stories of people who were once in the foster care system and are now starting their post-secondary education journeys. Tara Downling is finishing her final year at Vancouver Island University, or VIU, with a Bachelor's of Arts degree. She is highlighting her and other students' journeys through the foster care system. The program allows BC students who are current or former children or youth in care to have their tuition and eligible fees waived for them. This would allow these students to attend a post-secondary institution or an approved union-based trade training program without worrying about how they would afford to do so. Growing up, Downling was in foster care and didn't know about the tuition waiver program until she was older and applied to school at VIU.
3 years ago when I first applied to the school, and I was actually denied the grant because I already had an Associate of Art degree that I got for myself when I was in school in the U.S. that I paid for, and I only got that because I was trying to work towards a bachelor's, and I didn't know if I'd be able to financially be able to pay for that. And at that point, the provincial waiver program only allowed for one degree. So I ended up having to take a job and I moved across the country. And then I got an email in my inbox that said I had been awarded $28,000 to finish my degree at VIU. And I actually thought it was a hoax and I thought people were just trying to steal my information.
She says she always valued education and jumped at the chance knowing that she could return to school to finish her bachelor's degree. Now in the final year of her degree, Downling says she has decided to make all her projects based on the time she was in foster homes and the struggles she went through being in and out of the foster care system. In a directed study photography class, Dowling decided to do a community-based art piece discussing the tuition waiver program and going through foster care. For this piece, she highlights 15 people, including herself, who are in the tuition waiver program, with portraits taken of them through the printing process of Cyanotype. Cyanotype photography is a camera-less printing technique that involves capturing an image with UV light and chemicals to create a monochromatic blue image print.
So I created the project because I felt so alone in my struggle with being a foster child, and I've always wanted to kind of connect to other people that have gone through that and to share their stories, and myself included.
She says she was able to connect with other students in the tuition waiver program at VIU who were all excited to share their experiences in the foster care program.
Yeah, it was just really inspiring and exciting to see that people weren't afraid to share their experience, because I think that there's a lot of stigma around being a foster care, being in foster homes, and I think that it's because it's such a sensitive subject, not everyone wants to share their experience. So I was really kind of touched that so many people had the courage to want to share their experience and to be photographed.
Dowling shares that her experience in care isn't something she often shares.
And also because there's a negative stigma around it. So it kind of almost puts you in this box that you probably got traumas and maybe you're messed up and you're just not like a normal person if you've had that experience.
But she says she hopes sharing these stories of those who have been through the care system and are now seeking higher education will put a new light on those once in care. She says she hopes this artwork will bring attention to the provincial tuition waiver program so more youths who are or were in care know they have an opportunity to start their own education journey. Dowling's art piece titled We Are the Change You Want to See will be displayed at the VIU Library on the fifth floor starting later this month. For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
That's it for this week's Scoop. Catch us next week, Thursdays at 12 p.m. in Smithers, Thursdays at 4 p.m. in Burnaby, Fridays at 8 a.m. in Nanaimo, and weekdays at 7:30 in Prince George. The Scoop was made possible by funding from the Canadian government and the Local Journalism Initiative, a Community Radio Fund of Canada initiative.
This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, independent campus community radio from Simon Fraser University. We broadcast on the unceded ancestral territory of the Coquitlam, Musqueam, Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh. We also stream online at cjsf.ca. and listen to podcasts of our programs and our website.
Today, you're listening to